talking about the Gaiva yesterday. I want to point out that sometimes you see a person manifesting what seems to be an act of Gaiva, and really the reality is what it is the person has other issues which he uses his Gaiva as a way to cover up for those other issues. A person who feels very down and low about himself, one of the ways he tries to cover up for that is by trying to boast and say he's very special and this and that, trying to convince himself and others around him that he's really special. And really what he's doing is trying to fill up the void and the gap that's inside of himself. So you see a person acting very Balgaivadik, and the problem, you might say, okay, he'll sit and start learning Musar about Gaiva, and that's not the solution. That's going to make it worse, because that's not his problem. His problem isn't for him to recognize how little he is. His problem is he thinks he's too little and too nothing, and he's using it to compensate. So over there, I had a bocher once, said this sounds very strange. Well, the Musar Seder, but your Musar Seder is supposed to be, I'm special. For 20 minutes straight, repeat, I'm special. Repeat, you know, that's what he needed to hear. He needed to repeat to himself time and time again, I'm a very special person, and keep causing it to himself. He's very special, and then he'd be able to, then he could get it solved his Gaiva problem. But he used to put himself into people's faces, seemingly Gaiva, you know, this and that, because he had low self-esteem. Rabbi Tursky is the I would call him the father of the discussion of low self-esteem in our generation. He has like about 20 books on low self-esteem. I never knew you could have so many books about the issue of low self-esteem. But he has like book after book after book of that. And he says, he has this interesting theory that... Okay, it's a basic matter. Okay. There's a cartoon character called Peanuts, right? Charlie Brown. And Charles Schutz is the person who writes it. He was a person who writes about himself. He had problems with low self-esteem. He says he feels that every single character in the comic strip is a different manifestation of low self-esteem. So one person goes to addiction, and that's, you know, the guy with his blanket. And there's one guy who's always thinking he's terrible. And one guy who's always boasting about himself. And they know that, you know, it's each one was a different way to manifest that the problem of low self-esteem. He has three books on that, by the way, with the comic strips in there. So you can read the comic strips and not read the book, and it's a lot of fun. Okay. Now, the Mesillas Yesharim, one breath, the Mesillas Yesharim and Charles Schutz, okay. Now, the Mesillas Yesharim talks about the union of Gaiva in two places. In Perek Yud Aleph, which is in the Perek, he talks about the meat of Nikius, that a person not only is enough to correct himself, but a person has to cleanse himself out from all of the problems that he has, even to the minute details. So he first gives examples by various different mitzvahs, and he says, and it applies also to the mitzvahs, besides referring to mitzvahs, it also applies to mitzvahs. He says, for example, he goes through the mitzvah of Gaiva. He talks about it again later on. He has a whole section dedicated to the union of the nevus, but here he talks about what is Gaiva? A person is machshav of himself inside of himself. And in his heart he feels that he is deserving of praise. So the process of a person saying, you know what, I have what to offer and I need to do and I recognize what I have, that's not the issue. Is when I then take that and I say, and therefore I'm deserving of somebody sitting there and giving me praise and say, wow, you're really special. I deserve that. It's something which is coming to me. That's where the person loses it. I spoke about this idea before. One point before I say, I want to talk about the concept of repetition. Mr. Sherman writes, when he talks about the idea of repetition, he says that everything he says in Mr. Sherman is obvious. Now, by the way, it's not obvious, but at least to his mind, these are obvious points. And he says, with the reason, since they're so obvious, we don't think about them, and we need to constantly review them. And the yesod of Musar, of learning Musar, was to take a concept and to review it and constantly to absorb it. Absorbing things, human beings hearing it once. You go to Musar Shmuz, they tell you a gavaldic concept, hear it one time, you're inspired, it's not going to change you. It's not going to be absorbed. Rabbi Yerucham used to refer to it as idea of, you want to leave a strong impact on something, you don't make one mark on it. You mark the pen once and twice and three times in the same spot, and it goes deeper and deeper in. The more you keep hitting the same spot, the more it gets absorbed. The way he puts it over there, Rabbi Yerucham, he says that the neshama is betzem kodesh and tor. So what's this process about? The process is for the neshama to leave an impact on the goof. Because l'achrim ev esrim, we're not judged as a neshama, we're judged as a combination of neshama and goof, like the Mora says in Sanhedrin. So the goal is that the neshama, with its kedusha, shall leave an impact on the goof. Well, the goof, doing it one time is not going to make that impact. We do it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And what you take with you are the things which the neshama was able to impact the goof. That which you, the neshama changed the goof, in some way left an impact, inspired it, moved it, made the goof different. That's what you take with you after 120 years. So in conjunction with that, I say this story, and again, I'm explaining why I'm repeating it, because by now, you've heard it enough times that you can say it for me, and that's exactly the goal. I had this aura when I came to tell Zeshiva. Zeshiva Gifter used to say over the exact same stories time and time again. He had X amount of stories he used to say, and he would say them again. And each time he said that, he would not apologize that he's saying it. He would repeat it with the exact same inflection, the exact same words, the same excitement. It's the first time I heard it. And I was a baruch, he was like, Gevaldnabad, he can't think of any new stories. I mean, he has people come all the time. He has great mices, you know. I mean, he's got to say something new, you know, exciting, new, you know. And I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. Like, you know, as a speaker, you expect a person, when this person speaks, and Rashid was a very good orator, he was. You know, the part of the device, you say new things, exciting, two or three, four or five stories, you get the point. No, he said the same story, again and again and again and again. I hit some age, I can't tell you what exactly it was, I don't know, sometime in my 30s. I said, you know what? I know why he did it. Because those stories are coming out of my ears. I can tell you the stories verbatim, word for word. Because they made a rush on me. Because I heard them, some stories I can tell you, without exaggeration, I heard 100 times. I mean, you know, mamash again, and with each time with the exact same words, the same excitement. I remember when the sheep was not well at the end. I remember one time I was sitting by a shavuz, and the sheep was sitting over a mice, which I'd heard from the sheep of mice 50 times. And she was over the mice, and he said it with the two words different than he usually said it. And I apologize, I started crying. Because it means that's when at the end he wasn't well. His memory was going. And I could see his memory was going because he said it differently. Two words, three words, but it was a different story already. And it pained me because, like, how could, you know, the Rashiva was losing it. But, so the point, some points, I'm going to, you know, yachaz over once, yachaz over twice, yachaz over 10 times, 100 times, they start impacting you. Okay, that's the Hakdama. The point that I want to... So what's this Hakdama that I'm being mocked into? The point which we mentioned before. There's a saber, Yad Yecheskel. Yad Yecheskel, you know, they have from Yecheskel, many swarm they're called. Oh, Yecheskel, but apparently one of them, which was put up by the Mishpach, etc. There also was a saber put up by a Talmud, Sovim, which there was... Chumashurim that Reb Chatzkel had said when he was in Shanghai. During the Kuvi was in Shanghai, there's a shmuzin that he said. In the back, besides there was a Sefer Parshis, was Vertach on the Parsha, must have been a Chumashur or something like that. And then in the back, there was Maiselof that he said. And what I remember, looking at one of the Maises, and the Maises goes like this, that Reb Yisrael Salanter's original plan was just like his Rebbe, Reb Zundel, was a Nister. Reb Yisrael wanted to be a Nister. He wanted to be a Nister originally. He says, to be a Nister, how are you supposed to be a Nister? You have to be a Rebbe Kodesh Baruch Hu. See, daf learning, but if people see you learning, that shtares you're being Nister. So the first thing was he committed all of Shas, Gemara, Rashi, Tosis, etc. to memory. You know, word for word, all of Shas, so he could be learning and chazing over Shas, nobody knowing that he's learning, he's opening them without opening a sefer, so people wouldn't know that he's learned it. The second thing he did was he took his very intense Shmon Esrei with all of the Avodah that Rav Yisrael Salanter put into Shmon Esrei, and he compressed it into a very motionless, emotionless, and quick Shmon Esrei, davening. So he looked like one of the Balagolo who used to sit in the back by the stove, and, you know, in 2 minutes flat, he finished Shmon Esrei. Good, so he looked like this coarse individual. That was his plan. Later on in life, he realized that was not what Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted from him. Kleistel needed something else, and he went in a different direction. So I'm reading the story, and I'm thinking to myself, if I would have committed all of Shas verbatim, word for word, all of Shas bal peh, I would want you to know about it. I really would want you to know about it. I would drop a line here, drop a line there. I wouldn't, you know, necessarily boast about it. That's not good, you know, because I have to have a nevis, right? So I would, you know, but you mentioned this. Oh, yeah, you know, you're right. Boba Kamal Lamaches. Yeah, I remember that Gemara, yeah. Just that Gemara, I remember, you know. But I would do it enough times. You get a feeling that, you know, Eli Rangel knows something. He knew Shas, Bel Peh, Gemara, Rashi, Tosis. And he didn't want anybody to know about it. How did he do it? And the answer is very simple. When you live with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is real to you, You recognize that the only place that real recognition of value comes from is from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So what Elie Rangel thinks about you is not really important. And what anybody else thinks about you is really not important. The only thing that's really important is what a Kaddish Baruch Hu thinks about you. If he thinks you're good, everyone will think you're bad, who cares? And if he thinks you're bad, whoever thinks you're the greatest guy in the world, it's not going to help you. There's only one opinion which really matters. Is what a Kaddish Baruch Hu thinks about you. And the more you think about what human beings think about you, the more you lose that connection with the Kodesh Baruch. So as a matter of fact, you do not want people to know about you because that's going to steer, that's going to in negatively impact your connection with the Kodesh Baruch. And that's the process of what's called looking for Kavod. Kavod is I'm looking for recognition of my value from the world around me. The true Kavod is inside of you with the Kodesh Baruch. Hakina v'tayva v'kavod matzinas adam min ha'olam. It takes you out of that world inside of you between you and the Kodesh Baruch. And that's a terrible place to be. So how does a person deal with that? I don't think loy nova sehila. You know, if we get it right, what life is about, we get it. We don't want that. I don't want you defining me. I don't want you defining me. It tells the Rav one time said, he says that the person who is about COVID, he's looking for recognition from other people, is the worst Avodah Zoronik in the whole world. So it's an Avodah Zoronik, he's over to one person, to one Gatchka, to one thing, and this and that. Says a person who looks for COVID, the Gatzavelt is his Avodah Zor. Everybody's looking, he's bowing down to this guy, the guy should give him COVID. He's told him the whole world to give him COVID. It's like a fair little place to be. It's a fair little place to be. Why do you want to be there? What if you have value, good, and Kodesh Baruch Hu recognizes that, great. Now, it's a madriga. It's a great madriga. Obviously, Rav Chatzkel himself said, the Baal Musar Rav Chatzkel said, he said in Yiddish, he said, every person needs a spoonful of kavod every day. Everybody needs to know that you're valuable. If you're not valuable, a person would truly believe he has zero value, he'd jump off the roof and kill himself. Like, what am I here for? I have nothing to offer to the world. Everybody believes it has to know intrinsically that they have value. I need that. The question is, where do you get it from? But the person who thinks I'm looking for the world to give me tehillah, I'm looking outside of myself to get tehillah, says that generates a major problem. It totally skews my mind, what life is about what my focus is. The person's trying to daven, he's busy thinking about whether people think it's tzaddik or not. The person's learning, he's busy thinking about what the guy next to him thinks about. You know, it's like, there's so much static going on in your mind, how can you focus? The person, I'm here, I need to be what I need to be, I need to work on that as best as I can and accomplish what I have to accomplish, and I can't look around and define myself by the fact that other people think one way or the other about me. So it says this nakuda of Bavaba Yadama Kiloy Nova Sehila is a terrible place to be. It says some people think that, why? Because I'm very smart, some think because I'm a nichbad, some because I have a lot of money, the person thinks he's a gadol, the person thinks he's a chacham. It says each one of these things that a person which they think, as soon as you think you have something, the next step is you can fall into the world of gaiva. And it's a very big problem. You know, we all grapple with this. It says the Rosh Hashanah writes that there's a fascinating paradox of a person who was a Baal Gaiva, but he acts as an Anuv, and he's looking for the world to praise him for his anivus. Right? So he's I'm a big Talmud Chacham, and I sit in the back, and I try do all these things to make myself look like I'm a nobody. And people, and I'm waiting to hear the whisper, "Ha, he's a great guy. Look, he's such an honor." You know, this is. I mean, if you think about it, I would describe that person as a person. He's ill. He's ill. He's an ill person. The person has tremendous things going for him. He's talking to somebody worthy of value. And he's looking for the whole world. He's looking for the little kid to give him COVID. The little kid to define him. The little kid's going to define you. I told the story over recently. The Washington Post sponsored, about 2 years ago, they sponsored a social experiment. And they took one of the world's most renowned violinists, and they put this violinist in the subway station, one of the subway stations over here, on a Monday morning. They dressed him up with a Nationals baseball cap and a Nationals t-shirt. Put a few bucks in his violin, his $3 million Stradivarius violin. And they had him playing one of the most beautiful pieces of violin music, which is, and they wanted to see how many, they had a video camera watching it to see how many people would stop on a Monday morning going through the metro station to see how many people would be able to recognize beauty when it's not given to you in the proper setting. And that was the experiment. And they had different bets, how many people are going to stop, you know, and they did this for 45 minutes. So they counted afterwards that in the span of 45 minutes, 1,097 people walked by this spot. And they had a question of how many people would stop and listen to the music. Well, the reality was that they had, you know, one person said they predicted 100 people, 150 people, you know, this is gorgeous music. People pay hundreds of dollars to hear this guy play. Seven people stopped. The person who stopped for the longest was a four or five-year-old child, which was mesmerized by the music until the mother yanked the kid away and pulled him, let's get on with life, you know. Okay, that's half of the story. What was interesting to me was, why was this fellow here, Joshua Bell? Why was he here in Washington? He was here to receive an award from Kennedy, the Kennedy Center for recognition of his contribution to violin music. It means the connoisseurs of the world were bringing him here to Washington to give him recognition of how beautifully he plays music. Okay? He's here, Mamish. He's at the top of the world. They asked him, was he nervous? He said yes. So they asked him, "Will you normally play when you go into any of these places that you play?" He says, "No, he's not nervous." He says, "So what's the difference?" He says, "It's very simple." He said, "When I walk into whatever this place that I'm playing, you know, people pay money to hear me, so I'm validated before I start. People paid hundreds of dollars to listen to me, so I know that, you know, I was over here. I was worried what people are going to think about my music. I think the guy's the Meshugana. He's here in Washington. The connoisseurs of the world are saying he plays beautiful music. He's worried about somebody who's going to walk by. He'll never see the person again. Has zero value in the person, his life. And he was worried about what the guy's going to think about him. He knows he's a good player. What's wrong with us? And we're all like that. I mean, realize we're all like that. I'm worried about the kid next to me. I'm never going to see him again. I want to think I'm a nice guy. Why? And if you're a nice guy, it's good. Well, but why do you care about what he should think you're a nice guy or not? Why should you find a better person next to you? And Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to know who you are. That's more important. Much more important. And that's, as really the thing, it's like, you know, Gebald in the Welt. And I was impressed with the Welt. He was honest enough to write it in the article. And I think, you know, well, that's our society has created a reality that we focus out. We're very much not inwards. It's a very bad place to be. And this is the void of that. The first thing that the Rosh writes is, Tachlis Arichuk, run away from that. Because that's totally going to distract you from what life is about and what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is about and what you want to accomplish with your life and be able to connect into the real reality of what life is about. You have to run in the other direction. Tachlis Arichuk, a person has to run away from such a concept.